Once again, welcome everyone to the Book of Daniel, chapter 1. I'll be reading from the New King James version of the Bible. If you have a different version, I'm sure you'll still be able to follow along. It begins in verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. When we did our pre-book meeting last week, when we did our overview last week, we talked about some of the sieges that occurred with Nebuchadnezzar coming down to Jerusalem. The first siege that we're talking about here is in around 605, 604 BC is when they're dating. Nebuchadnezzar will come down and he will besiege the city. He will not destroy it at this point. They will surrender to him. He will set up a vassal king to control the region down there. And on this very first siege, we read in verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, that's Babylon, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Asphanaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. He's down there, and the city surrenders to them, and he takes some of the articles out of the temple. Later on subsequent sieges, and eventually when all of Jerusalem is destroyed, he'll remove all of the articles that remain in the temple, and they will be brought, as it turns out, for safekeeping into Babylon and into Persia to be returned by God at the appropriate time for the construction of the second temple. But the treasure of the land is not something that you can look at and value strictly in dollar and cents. The treasure really of a land is its people, or are its people. And Nebuchadnezzar knew and had a good understanding that the quality of the people you have around you, your advisors, those who you can use as administrators, can really enhance what you're doing and help you build the vision that you have for your kingdom. So he instructs his master of the eunuchs to find some of the children of Israel, some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles. So go and find and look in the best areas, the best young men, the best who were best schooled, had the quickest wit, the best knowledge, and we're going to recruit or bring these guys to Babylon, and we're going to instruct them in the knowledge and the literature of the Chaldeans, and we're going to make them work for us. Okay? That's the idea here. Now, in the book of Isaiah, we read of an encounter that Hezekiah had with emissaries that came from Babylon. Hezekiah was sick unto death. He cried out to the Lord and asked to be healed, and God granted his petition and gave him additional years to his life. I believe it was 15 years that the Lord had granted him. And Hezekiah recovers. And these emissaries come from this far-off kingdom of Babylon to say, hey, congratulations, we heard you're sick, glad you're feeling better. And he's happy to see them, and he shows them around his palace and his domain. Later on, the prophet Isaiah comes in and says, who are these guys? He said, oh, they come from some far place, Babylon. Oh, okay, what were they doing here? Well, they just wanted to wish me, you know, good luck or good fortune, you know, as I've recovered. And he said, what did you show them in your house? And he said, I showed them everything. There isn't one thing that I didn't show them. And then Isaiah gives Hezekiah a prophecy from the Lord. And he says, basically, all the treasure that you showed them is one day going to go to Babylon. And he says, your descendants, the fruit that comes from your lineage, will be taken and will be eunuchs in the house of the king of Babylon. Hezekiah gives one of those answers that always puzzles me when I read it. He says, "Well, that's good, as long as it's not going to happen in my time." Not a problem. I guess the future is the future. It was his point of view. But anyway, what we see here in the beginning of the book of Daniel is the exact fulfillment of that prophecy. Now, it's going to come in stages in terms of removing all of the articles, the treasure, the physical treasure. But in terms of removing the descendants of the king and bringing them into the service of the king of King Babylon Nebuchadnezzar, this is what Daniel is actually a fulfillment of, and his friends that taken. I believe in that prophecy, the Lord also tells him that they will serve the king of Babylon for basically three generations, and at that time they're released. And I may be mixing another prophecy from Jeremiah, where he talks about the length of the kingdom or the king Nebuchadnezzar and his descendants, that it would basically be three generations. And we'll also find that fulfilled in the book of Daniel. We'll see that Daniel will serve under Nebuchadnezzar the first, he'll serve under his son and then the grandson. And after that third generation, that line will be extinguished and the kingdom of Babylon will be conquered by the Medes and the Persians. So all throughout the scriptures, we see prophecy and we see fulfillment. And Daniel right now is going to become a prophet, but right now he's a fulfillment of prophecy. So they bring these young men in whom there was no blemish. I mean, they're good-looking kids, you know, not crippled in some way, no impediments. And they are gifted in wisdom, so sharp in mind, quick to understand, ability to serve in the king's palace, whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. And that's important. The idea was to take these young men and to use their knowledge of the cultures that they came from, right? But to turn them into tools of the Babylonian Empire, that their hearts and minds would be fully won over to the king, and therefore they would be able to serve him and him alone. If someone could mute on Donna or the other people that are on Zoom, if everyone would mute, please, we're getting some feedback. So the king then, as they're taken to Babylon in verse 5, I'm going to mute everyone here because we're getting that feedback. Okay, let's try that. Says the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that they may, at the end of that time, serve before the king. So this is the program that he's being indoctrinated into, being entered into. This is a program that is a 3-year crash course on how to be an advisor to King Nebuchadnezzar. And they're going to be treated very well when they are in Babylon. They're going to have good housing. They're going to have good food. As a matter of fact, they're going to eat what the king eats. They're going to be provided for from his table. They're going to drink the wine that he drinks. And you can imagine that the king is not being fed with second-rate cuisine. So they're taking these guys and they are wooing them with the best that Babylon has to offer, right? They want them to understand you've got a good gig here, just play ball, become part of the winning team, serve the king, and everything will go right with you. If you follow Nebuchadnezzar, things are great. If you don't, there's going to be a problem. It's a 3-year program. At the end of that time, that they might serve before the king. So now, among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And we will get very well acquainted with these gentlemen as we pursue, as we move forward in the book. Daniel, we had mentioned before last week that his name means God is my judge. Hananiah means Yahweh is gracious or God has favor. Mishael is who is what God is, or who is like God, is probably a better English translation. And Azariah, meaning Yahweh has helped. So these young men, we said, if we look at their name, you kind of have a sermon in each one of their names, reminding that God is the judge, that God is gracious, that nobody else is like God. He stands alone. He is unique, and that God is a helper, right? So these young men are being taken into Babylon, and they have these names, but they are not going to be allowed to keep those names because those names remind them of their roots, their Hebrew heritage. They remind them of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the Chaldeans do not want that. They want these guys to become fully Babylonian in their outlook. So they're going to change their names. The chief of the eunuchs now gave them names, to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Meshach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. Belteshazzar, Daniel's name, which remember we said Daniel is God is my judge, they change that and they say, no, Bel protects his life, one of the gods of Babylon. You know, don't worry about God being your judge. This is the God you have to serve now, and he's the one who's protecting your life. Shadrach, is the name that's given for Hananiah, and that means commanded by Aku, which is one of the other moon gods of Babylon. So instead of God being gracious, you now are taking your orders from a new god, right? This moon god of Babylon. Mishael, they gave the name Meshach, who is basically what that translated is, who is what Aku is. They basically took what they were saying in Hebrew and just switched the name of the god, right? It was who is what God is or who is like God. They changed it to who is what or who is like Aku, again, another Babylonian god. And then the last one, Azariah, they gave the name Abednego, meaning servant of Nabu or servant of, again, another Babylonian deity. I think he was the god of wisdom, the son of Marduk. So again, they take his name, which means God has helped, and they change it to basically be saying, you now serve a different god. You need to serve Babylonian god of wisdom. And it starts with how they're identified, and then everything else that these guys are going to be going through, they're going to be going through systematically stripping down from them everything that was Jewish in nature. They're going to take away their culture. And Daniel, it says in verse 8, proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested the chief of the eunuchs that he may not defile himself. So, what are we talking about here about this defiling himself with the food that came from the king's table and the wine that came? Right. Why was the food unclean? Well, there's two big reasons that the table of Nebuchadnezzar would not be appropriate for these young Jewish boys. One of them is that the food that was served to the king was almost 100% sure to have been offered to one of the idols in the gods of Babylon. So it was part of the sacrificial worship system, which would be completely counter to the Israel or Israeli, the Hebrew mindset. The other part of it is that what they were serving and how they were preparing it probably would not fall under the Jewish code for food, the kosher laws regarding food. And here's Daniel in this position. And remember, we said when these guys are taken away from Jerusalem, these are young men, sometimes somewhere between 12 and 15 years old, right? Young teen boys. And he says that he purposes in his heart that he would not defile himself, that he's making a decision not to go down a certain path, not to fall into the culture, to retain that which he is valuing as most important, and that is his relationship with Yahweh God above all things. He purposed it in his heart. When we are tempted in this world, when we are wooed by the culture, wooed by our flesh, wooed by Satan to do something that is contrary to the stated law of God, you're going to find out that if you have not already decided where you stand and who you serve, you're likely to be taken away in the tide of temptation. If you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus went to pray before he went to the cross, he invited some of the disciples to come along with him and pray, right? And those men, after they had a meal and it was late at night, were tired and they fell asleep while Jesus was praying and agonizing. And he chastised them a number of times that they needed to watch, they needed to pray, right? So that they wouldn't fall into temptation. The flesh, he said, I mean, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And we have to recognize that those disciples just weren't guys having a bad day there. They are examples of who we are. They were dedicated followers of Jesus Christ. They'd followed him for years. They loved him. They wanted to serve and do the things that would please him. Their flesh had a strong influence over them. And we who are Christians have to understand we're carrying around the same flesh. And if we aren't disciplining it, if we aren't deciding before time what we will allow and what we will not allow, what God says is good, we'll allow in, and what he doesn't, we will shut the door tight to it. If we don't decide that before time and then exercise by faith a discipline to remain in that state of holiness, we're going to have trouble in the world. And you know it in your own life. That if you want to maintain a prayer life, it takes discipline to do it. Your flesh is not going to want you to spend time in prayer. It's going to want to put you to sleep, right? Don't start going into a time of prayer with your phone right next to you. It's going to ring 150 times. You know, shut it off, quiet it, throw it under a pillow, get away from it, right? If you don't predetermine in your mind when you're going to pray, where you're going to pray, where's that place where you're going to shut yourself in and close the door, you're going to get interrupted. You're going to fall short. Reading the word, again, it has to be a discipline. We have to say that I'm going to set aside this time and then begin to stick to it and discipline your body. I'm tired now, and that's all right. Get it done, you know? And people say, well, you know, it shouldn't just be about checking off a box. No, it shouldn't be. But if you aren't determined to do it, you're gonna fail. And here's Daniel, 12 to 15-year-old boys, not known for their incredible discipline. Purposing in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies or the wine which he drank. Therefore, he makes a request. He requests the chief of the eunuchs that he may not defile himself. Now, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. Very, very important verse here. Daniel doesn't want to eat the king's food. But he has no power in this situation at all. He has no authority. He is under the complete control of those who have been assigned stewardship over him by the king. He can't decide to leave when he wants, to go where he wants. He's probably can't decide how he wants to dress, right? Where they're going to live. He has no authority to do any of this. And now he doesn't want to eat the king's food. So what he has to do is he has to make a petition. He has to make a request. He has to ask for permission to the chief of the eunuchs. And what is God doing in the background? I'm sure Daniel, we're going to see prayer is a part of his life. We're going to see that he is a strong man of prayer, persistent prayer. That behind the scenes, God is bringing Daniel into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. The guy who's in charge likes him. I'm sure he likes Daniel because Daniel is probably a really nice kid. He's smart. He's probably respectful. He's obedient to what they're doing. But that's not enough. You can have all of those traits, and people could still want to abuse you, not listen to you, take advantage of you. We probably all have stories we can share, something like that. In this instance, God is working behind the scenes in the heart of the chief of the eunuchs to give Daniel an opportunity to win favor. And the chief of the eunuchs says to Daniel, I hear what you're saying. I fear, though, the Lord, the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head for the king. So he makes his petition, and it's not like the king of the eunuchs says, absolutely not. I won't hear it. What you're saying is stupid. He gets what he's saying. He has no problem with it. He says, but if you guys don't look healthy as everybody else, the king's going to take my head off because I'm in charge with keeping you guys fit, making you fit for his service. Daniel understands this, and he says to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacy. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. So Daniel says, I understand. I don't want you to get you. Let's just try a little test. Not going to hurt anything for 10 days. What could happen in 10 days, right? If we don't look better, if we don't look good, then we'll eat the king's food. And if we look good, then, feed us with the vegetables. Now, at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacy. Well, these verses here sometimes cause people problems, and they will use them to espouse certain dietary preferences. They will say, see, a vegetarian diet is superior to those who eat meat. And if you want to be as healthy as you can, you should be like Daniel and eat just vegetables, drink water, right? Others will read that and will say, no, wait, look, they didn't say, I mean, they eat better, but they also looked fatter. See, all those carbs, they weren't getting enough protein. That's the wrong kind of diet long term. None of these verses are about diet. This was about not defiling himself. There is no preference in the Word of God that I can see that gives the perfect diet that man should eat. At different times, God changed the dietary requirements for the diet that was available to people. What did they eat in the garden? Do you remember? Yeah, fruit and nuts, right? Things that came off the trees. Okay. Later on, though, after Noah and the flood, what were they given to eat? Yeah, they could eat any of the food groups, right? Later on, they come out and they're in the wilderness and they're going to get the law. And God then makes limitations on certain foods that they can eat and certain foods that they can't eat. Later on in the New Testament, we're going to see that the dietary laws for the Christian church is put aside, right? And as long as we're giving thanks, we can eat all things. Daniel himself, later on in the book, there's a verse we'll read later on when he's receiving some of the prophecies in the latter part of the book. He will say that for a while he was fasting as he was praying. And he said he wasn't taking any meats or wine or drink during that time. So he wasn't a vegetarian his whole life. There was a time after they finished this test when he could probably get the right foods that he ate meat later on. So none of these things are to be construed here as a way to hammer somebody else about what they eat and what they shouldn't eat. Paul speaks a lot about that in the New Testament, about that we should not be causing or putting a stumbling block with our food and our food choices before our brethren. All right. Here, this was just a way for them to keep themselves holy and pure before the Lord. And that's the important point we want to take. So they conducted this test, and at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in the flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacy. And I'm here to probably tell you, and this is my opinion, that if all they were eating was the worst diet possible for the human body, that the Lord probably would have had them look better and better and stronger at the end of 10 days because of the intention of their heart and what he was trying to do there. That's again my opinion here, that there's always in all of these things the hand of the Lord behind these scenes, working and allowing Daniel and his friends to prosper. Now, one other point I want to make here is Daniel is the one who's doing the speaking and making the requests here, but there's four of these guys here, right? Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And I don't believe that it is just happenstance that these guys tend to group up together. They've been taken away from their homes. They've been taken away from their families. They've been put into a new culture. They've been given new names. They probably have all been castrated and are now made eunuchs in the house of the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. They've had everything change. But they're bonding together to walk in holiness before the Lord. It's very hard for a Christian or a person of faith who go through their life in a solo walk. We need people around us to encourage us, to lift us up, to pray with us, to have accountability to, and to give accountability for them as well, back in return. Proverbs tells us, right, that it's not good for one person to be there on their own. No, two are better than one, I believe it says, and a three, Ecclesiastes, and a threefold cord, right, is not easily broken. That there is something to be said about having fellows along this path that you're in. If you, and I know all of you are Christians wanting to serve the Lord, you wouldn't be on this Bible study if you didn't want to serve God. I would suggest and highly encourage you to find a couple people that you can pray together with, that you can confess faults one another with, you know, people that are trustworthy, that you can have accountability with. You know, if you're a man, find men. If you're a woman, find women. Okay? Don't go men finding, you know, these women compatriots and say they're going to walk, you're going to get in a world of trouble. Okay? But it's good to have people around because we all need to sometimes just get things off of our chest. Everybody goes through times when your faith gets weak. And it's really good to be able to say to somebody, I'm struggling here, brother. You know? Help me to understand what's going on. Pray with me about this or that. Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, I'm just, this is such a, this is like my biggest thing. I just wonder, maybe towards the end, if we had time just to share, like, who that's been and how that, I think it's such a critical thing in spiritual growth and really walking in that.
So remember, when the Lord sent out the disciples to preach, they never went by themselves. They went in pairs, right? God understands this. Back in the garden, when he looked at Adam, everything that I made is good. When he looks at the man, it's not good that he should be alone. He didn't create us to be single units. He created us to be part of a body, part of an entity, part of a family. And I know that these guys all probably were able to hold up under the immense pressure that they were in and to live a godly life. Obviously, it was God's hand upon them, his spirit upon them, but I'm sure that they were great encouragement to one another. So at the end of 10 days, they are all looking better. Thus, the steward took away their portion of the delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. In the Bible, it says, what should we do with temptation? Right? Right? Flee temptation, right? And when Satan comes along, what are we to do to him? Resist him, right? And what happens when you resist him? He goes away, right? There's a time that they had here of testing when that food was before them. They made this choice to stand tall. They got tested 10 days. There was victory in it. And then you know what happened in the end? They took away the other food. It was gone. That temptation was gone now. If we resist, God will give us the victory. Now, you may have to go through seasons of resistance, but what Satan will always tell you when you're enduring temptation is, you can't do this. This is the way it's always going to be. It's always going to be this pressure. You're never going to win. Things are never going to change. You're never going to outgrow this. You're never going to get victory. And he's going to paint a picture of you of despair and hopelessness. But that's not the way it works. When Jesus was tempted by Satan in the wilderness, he was tempted for, what does it say? A season. It said he came back again later. But if we resist in the moment, God does give us a respite from those things as well. And that's good to know. I just have to do what's right today. I don't have to worry about tomorrow, the next day, 100 days, 1,000 days. I don't have to be perfect for the rest of my life. But today, I need to walk with the Lord, and eventually, He's going to give me victory. They took away the portion of the delicacies and the wine that they were able to drink and gave them vegetables. And as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Who gave them knowledge and skill? God gave, right? Again, here in the background, God is watching over these guys and especially equipping them for the work that they were going to be doing. Now, none of these men are having what we would consider as a career, a spiritual position. They are not Levites. They are not in the priesthood, right? They're not ministering to people as we would consider a ministry role, like a pastor. They're all going to be administrators. They're going to have day-to-day responsibilities in the kingdom, watching over the province of Babylon and other things. But it's God who's giving them knowledge and skill. And I want you to understand that from God's point of view, there is no work that is holy and other work that is just secular. That for the man or the woman of God, however God equips you, what he gives you, the knowledge, the skill, can be used and employed for the good of his kingdom to bless his people no matter what job title you have. If you work with your hands, God can use you to be a blessing, to be a manifestation of Christ on the job site. If you're an accountant, if you're a lawyer, if you're a medical professional, it doesn't matter what work you're doing. We have to understand that the gifts that we have, the skills and the talents, they come from God. And then, therefore, if they come from God, there's a godly purpose to using them. And the best way we could ever use our gifts is in the service of God. Daniel, I'm flipping these around all the time. David was a skillful musician. He was good at playing, so much so that they recruited him to play for Saul, the king, right? He had a great skill, great knack with music. But what do we remember David for? There's no top 40 hits that we remember from David. But we remember the Psalms, right? The songs that he recorded for the Lord and about the things of God that have blessed people for centuries upon centuries. That whatever we do with what God has given us in the service of God is the highest use of the talents that he has given us. He strategically placed you to be a light wherever you are. not just to be a church to shine here, to shine out there. And when we use our gifts in that way, it brings him great glory. He gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. These were the gifts that they needed in the work that they were going to be doing. Wherever you are, you can ask God for the right equipping. Lord, you seem to put me in this situation. I need, I hate even saying this sometimes, I need patience, Lord, right? I need understanding. I need discernment. How many times when people will come up and ask me a question, they say, hey, I want to ask you a question. I'm silently praying, oh Lord, please give me wisdom by your spirit. I have no idea what they're going to ask me. And if I'm answering in my own strength according to my own knowledge, I'm likely to give them a terrible answer. So give me the wisdom that's required to give them an understanding that comes from you. He gives them knowledge and skill in all literature and all wisdom. And look what it says. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now that's going to become really important in the next chapter. But I want you to see that God's equipping was there in advance of the need, that he knew what they were going to need, and he was already providing it. A lot of times we don't feel very well equipped. I'm here to tell you that the Bible says about you, the New Testament says about you, that you are able ministers of the gospel. Able ministers of the gospel. Jack, you worked in union, right? What were the different levels that they had from like where somebody started as were they an apprentice? What were the levels? Right.
You really don't really learn from getting parents. Now they say, here's the plans, go do it.
So five years then.
In 5 years. Now, after that, there's 20 other things you can be tr specifically trained in. In today's world, every one of them you get a certificate of competency. Now, when I was going through, they trained you for them, and they expected to be able to do them, but you didn't get any certificates.
Right.
Now, take courses, like I was about that for about a year and a half. You train for that. You work at a nuclear power plant, you can build the front of your valve. But there's guys that were professional, and they did it for 25, 30 years. I did it for a year and a half.
Right.
And we were like the act of all three.
Yeah.
None. Max, everything specific. Welders would get 20 different stuff. Every service got 5 pounds and 10 pounds a day. To go with the welder.
So the point I wanted to make from that is that there were levels that you proceeded through in your knowledge. You know, went from an apprentice to a journeyman and eventually to a master in something, right? The Lord says about us that by his equipping, where he's placed you, he's already made you an able minister of the gospel. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're going to share a message somewhere that you don't prepare, that you don't go to school, that you don't, use yourself or try to educate yourself. But he gives you what you need. He will say to the disciples later on, when you get taken in and you're brought in front of magistrates and judges and kings, don't worry about what you're going to say. I will give you the words to say. He equips his people. So wherever you are, I want you to have confidence that God can use you there. Confidence in him, not confidence in yourself. Confidence in yourself will get you nowhere. Confidence in yourself will really be an undoing. But if we are saying, Lord, you put place me here, give me what I need. Give me the knowledge, give me the skill, give me the wisdom. And in Daniel's case, the basic or the ability to understand all visions and dreams. Now, at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. This is getting near graduation day. 3 years have gone by. Could you imagine what lessons these guys had? They had to learn a whole new language, the Chaldean language. They had to learn all the science of the Chaldeans. Their mathematics, their way of thinking, their philosophy, their history, right? They had a lot to learn. How their government was set up, how they organized their kingdom, their economic systems, all these other things. Now they come in and they have to stand before the king and he's going to interview them, right? Talk about a final exam. Nebuchadnezzar was known to be ruthless and harsh. He was known to have people beheaded, have their houses torn down, have their families killed. I mean, he was a rough guy. He's not the kind of guy you wanted to make a bad impression in front of. I remember 12 to 15-year-old young men, now 3 years later, so anywhere between 15 and 18 years old, now standing before the king of the known world and going to get thrilled to see how well you've prepared your lesson. These guys have been in the trial this whole time. The king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served for the king. These four young men come out at the top of their class, the top of their class before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. 10 times better than the magicians and the astrologers. That's not hard for me to believe. Because the magicians and the astrologers, right, their source of learning and their source of knowledge was limited to either man's understanding or occultic practices, right? There's some knowledge there. Now, there was some power there. But it compares not at all to God being our source. Moses, when he sees the burning bush, he comes over. The Lord introduces himself, right? Moses said, "When they ask me who sent me, what shall I tell them?" Basically, God, what's your name? "I am that I am," Lord's answer. I know I've shared this with you before. The first couple times I read that as a Christian, I was like, it's a stupid answer. What does that mean? I am who I am. I wanted him to say, my name's Ralph, Fred, something we could understand. But he is beyond our comprehension. And he gave a name to try to give Moses an understanding of the limitlessness and the usefulness, the utility of God, right? I am whatever you need me to be. You need a strong tower? I'm a strong tower. You need strength? I'm strength. You need love, I'm love. You need wisdom, I'm wisdom. Right? You need patience, fortitude, whatever it is. I am that I am. That is the well that we dip into. That's our source. That's where our power comes from. God is greater. Paul said, if God is for us, who can be against us? Right? We're more than conquerors. Right? All of these wonderful things. Why? Because we're something special? Absolutely not. But because our God is God and he's the only God. I remember when I first read through the book of Isaiah, there were parts of it that actually made me laugh when the Lord basically talks to the prophet and says, if there are any other gods, I don't know them. I've looked around. I know one end of the universe to the other. I haven't found any other gods. There is none like me. And that's who we serve. That's our confidence. Make a big point out of this because there's going to be a lot of days when you're going to need that confidence. Some days are really hard. We were talking earlier about the assassination of Charlie. It's a hard day. It's a hard day for his wife. It's a hard day for his kids. Let's say someone who serves God and then their life is cut short like that. To find a reason in that, to find strength, to find to go on to tomorrow. And I know God is able to meet that need. And we're all going to have times when we have to go deep into that well for to be consoled, to be empowered. But I think a lot about the words of Corrie Ten Boom. And she said after her incarceration in the German Nazi prison camps. He said, there is no hole so deep that God is not deeper still. That's who we serve. They were far better than all of the Chaldeans, all of the astrologers, because they had God in them and was working through them. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Now that seems like a little bit of a throwaway line, kind of like a nice way to finish off the chapter, you know, in a lot of stories and say, and they lived happily ever after, right? All right. But this is really a very important line because Daniel is starting his work here as this young man, again, between 15 and 18 by the time they finish their training, working for Nebuchadnezzar. He is going to go through Nebuchadnezzar's reign, his son's reign, into the third thing of Belshazzar when he's there, or Belshazzar, when he's there. Then Darius is going to come in. The kingdom's going to be going to him, and it's going to come to the first year of Cyrus. There's a lot of confusion, by the way, between Darius and Cyrus. Some people say he's the same person. Some say Darius was someone that worked for Cyrus, but what is the magistrate of Babylon in that area in that time? There's a lot of debate on that. Don't get too hung up on it. The Bible tells us Darius, the Bible tells us Cyrus. That's all we really need to know in the timeline there. But he's going to continue working in these realms, be at the forefront of major kingdoms and powers into his 90 years old. God is going to keep him active and influential all his life. Talk about a ministry. Talk about a ministry. Daniel continued until the first year of the king of Cyrus. And we're going to get to watch him go through this in this book as we proceed forward. Any questions? Comments?
I had one good thing. You kind of answered it. Why do they have to be good looks? Not just smart.
Because if you're the king, you don't want to look at ugly people all the time. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple reasons. One, if you are healthy looking, it is a indication that you are healthy and strong, right? So if you have people that are like weak, sickly, right? They're not the people they're going to invest 3 years in training. They don't know if the guy's even going to survive. So they're picking the people that basically look good, look healthy, look strong, you know. So that's kind of the idea. Plus, you know, I'm sure they if they had to stand in front of these people all the time, they want people that are fairly attractive in there, you know. I don't know what passed as attractive in that day. Probably not me. But, any other questions, comments? Anybody on Zoom? You're all muted. So you have to unmute to ask your question. No? Still awake? Anyone awake on Zoom?
Yes.
Yes, we're awake.
I'm so glad.
Very good, Robert.
Because a lot of you don't have your headphones on, and, you know, you could be snoring in the background there. All right. Jim, you had asked about if we had time. We have a couple minutes.
I pretty regularly get beaten in tennis by Charles but you know, we pray afterwards, check in, and pray for each other's kids and families. And he's been an elder, he's been a worship leader, and it's taken probably 2 years to form that relationship. You know, and I think I've really been blessed throughout life to have people like that, that you can confess your sins one to another, you know. So I just wondered if anybody wants to share who, you know, what else, like maybe what that's looked like for like different people that have spurred you on. I think it's vitally important to have that kind of relationship. It's funny, here we're all men, you know, which is rare in Bible studies. But anybody else, someone has mentored you?
What about a mentor?
Well, probably for you, I know who it would be.
Well, my dad he's raising this whole charity, I feel when I'm here, I feel loved, I feel I have family, and I can feel the Lord too. I'm very grateful.
No, it's good to find somebody that you can pray with. And usually I would say the best thing is that you have somebody that you can just begin in prayer with, sharing in prayer. And then over prayer, over time, you usually can see if the people are faithful and trustworthy and determined, you know, in following the Lord. And they can become good candidates to have not just a mentor-mentee relationship, but really we're looking for accountability, an equal relationship, you know. Companion, right? Someone to go along walking in life with you.
Early on, this is probably 1997, 8, John Philbrick, and I said, no, I was afraid to ask him to be like a prayer partner. And I probably talked with him every week for 20 years. And boy, guy knows the Bible more than they do. But, you know, when you sin, he said, yeah, the people are going, and then he's, and then every once in a while he said, hey, now, the enemy has you right where he wants you. You're in a tizzy. And if you react like that, it's going to blow up. Save my back, you know? I just think that's, we're such an individualistic, I mean, Jim could probably say, you know, we're such an individualistic culture in America. It's all about me and Jesus. Having that other. Can you give a thought, brother?
Well, that definitely is true.
So find your friends at church, not in the bar. Okay. Why don't we, Jack, did you want to just say one thing and then we'll have close in prayer.
I'm praying. They'll never leave us as a second in the place you came first.
Yep.
And I found out maybe over the years, I was wanting to speak to fairship, a lot of times fairship, but some people in front of me. I see where you don't really get to speak to them the way you'd like to. When I found out, I got saved at home reading the Bible. The Holy Spirit opened my eyes. I found out that when I'm getting trouble, I need advice. I go to my gosh. He always answers me. He speaks with me.
Yeah.
And he always never pulls any punches. He deals with me, with each other, he deals with us according to who we are. Well, I've dealt with men my whole life, you know. So that's an old thing. And I need that.
Yeah.
So I find out that maybe I spend more time with the pastor and all of mine. But he's a great counselor.
No, I think the point that you're making, Jack, is very valid. And I don't want to be misconstrued. Obviously, the relationship we have with the Lord has to be the primary one, right? That's where we most focus on. Right.
So,
but
first John, James 5 is what I'm talking about. These messages.
And that's not
directly to God. That's to each other.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. I went to the elder of James chapter 5 when I'm still here. So I do believe that it's very important.
Well, why don't we close in prayer? Steve, would you like to pray for us?
Father, thank you for the plans to get together tonight. Look at the life of Daniel and his three friends. How they dedicated to follow you. How much the important to be to us too, that help us to follow your will in our lives too. Lord, we do thank you for the accountability partner that we can have. Help us to search for one if we don't have one. We really just pray that you continue to guide our steps When you had our steps is by us getting into your own learner, right? Studying it, applying it to our lives. We're now, as we leave here, we have a mission field to walk out into. Rob was talking about tonight. You have appointed us to a certain place to help us to be a light for you, Matt. Right. Part of the community.
All right. Invite a couple hundred people to come next week. We want to have no room in this place. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Robert, good night, everyone. God bless you all.